in and thank you all for holding. This is the conference coordinator. All lines will be on listen only until we're ready for the question and answer session of today's conference. I would also like to remind all parties the call is being recorded. If anyone has any objections, please disconnect at this time. I would now like to turn the call over to Governor Tim Pawlenty. You may begin, sir. Thank you.
Good morning, everybody, and sorry for the slight delay in taking the call instead of 10:45, beginning now at 11 or so. And we just completed meeting with legislative leaders, Senator Hottinger and Senator Rest and Speaker Swigum and Dick Day, from Minority Leader Dick Day from the Senate, and we just concluded that meeting a couple moments ago, so we had to postpone this call slightly. But thank you for your interest, and we wanted to just give you an update on the session, give you a few highlights from our perspective, and then we'll open the lines for any questions that you have. But obviously, as you know, we didn't finish the session last night. That's disappointing. You know, everybody hopes that the legislature would get their work done on time. But given the magnitude of the differences between the parties and the magnitude of the crisis that the state is facing with war and historic budget deficits and economic challenges and layoffs and other issues, going a few extra days, if we can limit it to that, it still will not be a bad result. Again, given the magnitude of the challenge we're facing, if somebody would have said in January we'd be out of here by Memorial Day, that would still be a decent result in terms of the timing of it. But beyond the timing, and perhaps more importantly, is the substance of it. You know, what are we accomplishing? Last night there were bills passed with respect to ag and environment and economic development. Second bill that was passed, it was higher ed. So those two are out of the way, and we are on to other bills. There are two other bills that have, at a leadership level, been agreed upon in terms of the negotiations. They include state government finance, and they also include judiciary. And one or both of those bills may be processed on the House and Senate floors today. If not, they'll be processed tomorrow. And then the leaders are, and the governor's office are moving on to negotiate the kind of leadership-level agreements in various other remaining areas, and that includes health and human services and taxes and K-12 and a couple others. So we hope, as a goal, to be able to get these bills negotiated and processed and have the special session completed by the end of this week. That's our goal. Of course, around here, you never know how things are going to go, but that is certainly our goal, and we're pushing hard to get that done. In terms of what's been accomplished so far, some of the highlights is certainly not all of the highlights, but if you look in K-12 education, even though we've got a massive budget deficit, it looks like we're going to succeed in protecting the core K-12 classroom from budget cuts. There'll be some other cuts in education, but the core K-12 classroom functions will be protected from cuts. We have a historic piece of legislation that has passed and will be signed into law, reforming our school standards and curriculum. We've abolished the current profiles of learning. We'll be replacing those with, I think, much better, more focused, more rigorous school standard. That's a major accomplishment and achievement in the school area. We're working on a number of other reforms that will impact K-12 education, including repealing the negotiation deadline or continuing the sunset for getting rid of the penalty for not negotiating employee contracts with between school districts and employee groups by January 15th, and a number of others. In transportation, the bill is not finalized yet, but I think it'll result in the largest infusion of funds for road and bridge construction in modern history, in over a decade, probably closer to 15 years. And so while there's disputes about the bill, the net result of it is going to be the largest commitment to increase road and bridge funding in 10 or 15 years. In the jobs area, we're working real hard to get these job and economic development initiatives passed. They include the Job Z Zone bills. They have passed the House, and in a different form are in the Senate bill, but they remain somewhat in play in terms of the negotiation. We want to drive those forward. We're pleased that the legislature seems poised to funding our bioscience initiatives that we've talked about in terms of the University of Minnesota Mayo partnership and trying to better position Minnesota in the bioscience area in a variety of ways. In other areas, health and human services, we are looking at another step in welfare reform, which we believe will make some progress on this session. That will be a significant reform and change and improvement for Minnesota. We're making significant progress in Homeland Security, House File Number 1, the bill to place the expiration dates of visas on foreign visitors. Looks like it's going to be included in the final packages. We also have been working with law enforcement and public safety officials to get a package together that will provide increased funding for interoperable communication systems so that federal, state, and local law enforcement officials can communicate more easily and completely. And those are just some of the highlights. But obviously the situation is difficult here, but we are moving it along, and we hope to have it concluded, and then everybody can get on with the business of taking credit for the advances or assigning blame for what they perceive to be as the problems. But I think rather than me going on with that, I'll just throw open the lines and see if anyone has any questions. I'll be happy to take them.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, press star 1 on your touch-tone phone. Star 1 to ask a question. Terry Krause, you may ask your question.
It's Troy Krause from the Redwood Gazette in Redwood Falls. And Governor, you've faced some anti-outstate criticism over the last few months going into the session, and that was reflected recently with the announcement from the Minnesota Historical Society. Can you address some of that anti-outstate criticism and what you've done to go against that, what people are saying?
Yeah, thanks, Troy. Well, I get criticism no matter what. If you're in the metro area, they say you're cutting the metro area too much. If you're in greater Minnesota, they say you're cutting greater Minnesota too much. So everybody thinks their area is getting the worst of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand that. But in terms of the Historical Society's comments, I guess I'm not sure what you're referring to. I know they've announced that they're closing some sites. There's a couple of sites in the metro area and then several sites in greater Minnesota as well. So I'm not sure what their comments were beyond that. But, you know, the interesting thing about greater Minnesota metro, a lot of people talk about it in the context of LGA funding.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I continue to support the original goal of LGA funding, which is if you have a community that is not of sufficient size or doesn't have sufficient tax base or doesn't have sufficient population to pay for your local services locally, then the state would help and level the playing field so that people across Minnesota would have a reasonable access to at least basic and adequate local services in the area of police and fire and the like. But the system has, over the decades, gotten very distorted, has been manipulated for political gain. And what you see now is large sums of money in the LGA pot going to communities that are doing very well. And you have growing, prospering cities that have lots of tax base, lots of people, growing numbers of people, and significant amounts of people and ability to pay, and the state is paying 40, 50, 60, 70% of their general fund, you know, their operating budget. And one, we can't afford that anymore, and two, it isn't fair. So there's two questions with respect to LJ. One is, how much money are we going to spend on? And I think everybody realizes there's going to be a reduction in the overall amount of funding. But secondly, can we come up with a better formula? I mean, shouldn't we be able to come up with a better formula that gets back to a more needs-based approach so that communities who are not as needy aren't draining resources away from communities that are needy? Now, just to tell you how fair we've tried to be with that in our most recent formula we proposed, I got more Republicans mad at me than Democrats. Many of the prospering greater Minnesota regional centers are Republican areas, and they don't like it when people tell them, you know, as you continue to grow and prosper and add tax base, maybe you shouldn't have the rest of the state paying 50% or more of your city operating budget. I support the program. I support the intent, but it's gotten almost unrecognizable in recent years and largely the result of political manipulations. But what also people don't realize is it's not a rural issue, I mean, particularly. Over half or a large sum of the LGA money comes to the metro area. It goes to St. Paul. It goes to Minneapolis. It goes to the first-ring suburbs. And so, you know, this notion that only Greater Minnesota that is feeling the pinch. That is not accurate. And so when you come to Hennepin County, for example, the folks there say, you know, we've got the bulk of the poor people, and when you cut human services and you cut the charity care hospital and funding for that in Hennepin County, you're disproportionately hurting the metro area. So no matter where I go, people feel their area is getting unfairly treated. So, but I do think if you look at the entire package, there are reductions in most areas of the state. We've tried to make them equitable.
Mr. Krause, are you finished with your question?
If I could ask another one, that'd be great.
Sure, go ahead, Troy.
Can you reflect on me, Governor Pawlenty, or reflect for me how you think that the first session of your term has gone?
Well, I think you have to put it in context, Troy. Overall, you know, first of all, it's not over yet, so I don't want to prematurely make any judgments or assessments. There'll be time for that later. But I think the session has to be put in the context of a historic crisis. I mean, this is a state that during this session has faced war. In many respects, we're still at war. We have faced a near-recessionary economy. We have a historic budget crisis, and I'm not talking about just equal to past budget crises, but you know, double or triple the largest budget deficit in the history of the state. We have had mass layoffs in terms of our economy. We've had healthcare concerns in terms of SARS, and the list goes on. And so people who want to compare this session to others, I think you have to put it in context.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the fact that there's a special session, while it's disappointing, isn't the end of the world. I mean, there's been special sessions almost every year in recent years, and it's too bad, and we should look at reform. But the fact there's a special session by itself, I don't think means a whole lot other than the legislature didn't get its work done in time. But if you look down the list of things that we're going to accomplish, you know, solving a historic budget crisis without raising taxes is a significant accomplishment. This is a state that has a budget deficit not because we have a tax problem, but because we have a spending problem. The reason we have a deficit is because our spending was scheduled to increase over 14% for the upcoming biennium, and our revenues were scheduled to increase only 6%. And so if you go ask most Minnesotans, you know, are your paychecks going up 14%? They'll tell you no. And if they ask them, do you think your state government, our state government, should learn to live within a 6% increase in its revenues, most Minnesotans would say yes. And so all I'm asking state government to do is to do what most families, most businesses, most nonprofits are already doing, which is live within your means. And, you know, the budget, this big bad budget that everybody accuses me of having to be so terrible, increases spending in Minnesota. The biennial budget under my proposal was going to go up $1.3 billion. And as part of this compromise with the Senate, it just increased another $300 million on top of that of additional spending. So, you know, we are not reducing the budget overall. The budget is going up. It's just going up more slowly than people had expected. And you couldn't have a state continuing on a trajectory of 14% increases in spending. But then in each category, you know, you go through the categories and you're going to see significant and dramatic change and improvement. Like I said, passing the profile of learning, that's a decade's worth of work for people interested in education reform and school standards reform. We will pass the largest transportation package in over a decade in all likelihood. That's significant. We will pass another round of welfare reform. That is significant. We will get substantial improvements in Homeland Security and public safety with respect to House File 1 on the immigrant visa expiration dates and on the improvements in interoperable communications. We are going to get significant improvements in economic development tools, particularly for Greater Minnesota with these job zones. So the list continued. We have tort reform that was passed, historic tort reform. So this is a significant session, not just because we solved the budget crisis, but we have passed bills that have been that represented decades worth of work, and we actually got them done.
Thank you. Pat Fihardy, you may ask your question.
Hi, Governor. Good morning.
Hi, Pat. How are you doing?
Fine, thanks. What I'm kind of trying to get out of this is, for northeastern Minnesota. What do you see coming out of this session that's going to have some pretty quick impact on our economic situation?
Well, two things come to mind, Pat, that could help immediately, and there are probably others as well. But, you know, obviously northeastern Minnesota is struggling, and you're experiencing a lot of the economic downturn that other parts of the state have, but even more so. And so what we've tried to say is if you just look at the normal plea from northeastern Minnesota legislators, it's basically, you know, send us more LGA or don't cut our LGA, send us more declining enrollment aid, and we're happy to try to help with those programs, you know, particularly when we have money, but sending cash is treating symptoms of the underlying problem. And the reason that northeastern Minnesota or parts of it has a declining population, declining enrollment in schools, which then results in aging populations with fewer and fewer people to support them, is because the economic opportunities and the job markets have declined, and some communities have dried up, and people aren't going to stay in communities unless they have a reasonable shot at a good-paying job. And so while it's helpful in the near term to send out cash assistance, you don't start addressing the underlying problem. All you're doing is delaying the inevitable, and I'm not interested in delaying the inevitable. I want reform and change and improvement, and so that's why we've been so passionate about these tax-free zones, you know, we could have applications received and zones designated and up and running as early as 1 year or less from now. I'm excited about the prospect of a coal gasification or new technology energy production facility potentially on the Iron Range that's referenced in one of the versions of the Prairie Island bill, providing some incentives and recognition of that project. We have been working with, communicating with the owners of the mines on the Iron Range, trying to figure out the best path, the best way for the state to be helpful in terms of keeping those facilities operating and viable and the jobs there. And then we're also interested in exploring, you know, the next generation of technology and industry for that region. And certainly that can be mining in part, but I think it's also in our best interest to try to encourage diversification of the economy. So the people of northeastern Minnesota just aren't always on the roller coaster ride of taconite.
Thank you.
Thank you. Tom Combe, you may ask your question.
Thank you. Governor, this is Tom Combe at the Ely Echo.
Hi, Tom.
Here in Ely.
You been down to the chocolate mousse lately?
Actually, it's I'm looking right out at it right now through my window. One question, obviously, following up on Pat's question a little bit in terms of northeastern Minnesota, and we have heard, you know, for the better part of 2 months, a lot of statements about the impact of cuts in LGA, and specifically in the city of Ely, about a $3 million budget annually, and at least the latest figures I've seen from the Department of Revenue, Ely's looking at a loss of about $500,000 over the course of the next 2 years, and the city officials have been pretty vocal in opposition to your budget, and have said some things. I'm sure you've heard the comments from members of the northeastern Minnesota delegation regarding your position on LGA. But specifically, if you could say something to the people of Ely about the loss of LGA, my readers have heard plenty from the city officials. What would you tell the residents of Ely in a paragraph or two about the cuts of LGA and
sure,
and your rationale?
Well, Ely may be a place that actually needs LGA,
sure,
and places like Ely may benefit from our new formula to try to redistribute money more on a prioritized basis towards need.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't looked at how the most recent proposal that we have affects Ely, and it's clear everybody's LGA is going to be reduced, so we start with that. It's not like you're going to be held harmless or you're going to get increased, so everybody's going to have to take some reduction for the most part. But then the real question is, of the money that we are going to spend, can we most fairly distribute it into areas that are most in need? And we also realize that many communities have come very accustomed to LGA, and so you can't just pull the rug out from underneath them. You got to do it incrementally, and hopefully we won't have to do it once we get beyond this crisis at all. But so we've said no city under our proposal will lose more than 5% of their total revenues as a result of our LGA cuts. And that's if you're a big city. If you're a small city, the most you're supposed to lose is 3.5%. There's a cap of your total revenues. Now, cities argue with us about what's a fair definition of total revenues, and we'll work with them on that. But if all we're asking cities to do is to take a 3 or 5% reduction in their LGA as a percent of their total revenues, we don't think that's unreasonable when the state has a 15% budget crisis. And this is a program, by the way, the LGA program, that has taken no cuts in recent months or years, even though we've been in deficit. And in fact, it's one of the only programs in all of state government that has a built-in inflation factor in it. Automatic increases are scheduled for the program. Now, as to Ely, and I don't know your city's budget, but just assuming the numbers you just gave me are their general fund budget or their operating budget, you said they had is it a $3 million budget?
It's just a shade over $3 million, about $3.1 million.
That's per year?
Per year. Annually.
So $3.1 million per year, and you said they're going to take a $500,000 cut over the next 2 years.
Yeah,
I don't know whose proposal or numbers those are, but let's just assume that's all true.
Mm-hmm.
That's $250,000 a year on a $3.1 million budget. That's less than 10%.
Sure.
And, you know, that's I don't have a calculator here, but let's say it's 6 or 7%. And, again, those are probably somebody else's numbers, and I suspect they're probably different than ours. But mm-hmm. Let's assume it's all true. You know, it's a 5 to 10% reduction in their city budget as a result of our LGA cuts. We got a 15% budget crisis here. And so everybody's got to tighten their belts a little bit, and I don't think a 3 or 5 or 7% reduction in city budgets is unreasonable. Now, for really small cities where they have limited options, if you only have 4 employees total or 10 employees total, it's harder to lay one person off than it is if you got 1,000 employees. So we recognize some accommodation has to be made for smaller cities, but everybody, cities, state, counties, are going to have to trim a little bit and tighten their belts a little bit, and that includes the city of Ely. I recognize your options are more limited, but again, it, just on the numbers you gave me, it looks like about a 7% cut.
Thank you.
Yep.
Sir, at this time I'm showing no further questions. If you would like to ask a question, press *1 on your touch-tone phone.
Okay, and if there aren't any questions, we can wrap it up too, but does anybody have any last questions?
Sir, I'm showing no questions
okay,
at this time.
Great. Well, thank you very much for your interest, and we'll do this from time to time again, and appreciate your calling in, and have a great rest of the week. Goodbye.